Lions fans. It's time for the podcast you've been waiting for. The show where Kool-Aid runs blue, faces turn red, and rose-colored glasses never go out of style. This is the Detroit Lions Podcast. Your Detroit Lions and Reddit connection. And now, two guys who haven't scored since 1958, Chris and Case.
Hey, hidey-ho, Lions fans. Welcome to the Detroit Lions Podcast, episode 106. This is the official Detroit Lions Podcast for Reddit. I'm your host, Chris, and with me is my good friend and co-host, Case. How are you doing, my man?
Man, I am so pissed off. I went out on a limb and offered my services to the team at linebacker, because I know that they're dying for linebackers. So I went out, I went out on the field to tell them that I was there to help them. And how do they respond? Not only do they not even like talk to me, they throw me out and put me in the Allen Park jail where I am now.
I just can't understand why. I just don't understand. So, well, in today's show, we're going to talk about Taylor Decker's torn labrum. We're going to talk about what we can expect from Golden Tate. Matthew Stafford's contract extension comes up, and we do all this with Jeff Risden aboard for the ride. We got a great show lined up again this week. Case, are you ready to go, my man?
Well, at least Ford Field isn't the only place where the Wi-Fi has been upgraded.
Let's kick this off and break it down.
All right, let's talk about the announcements really quick. We want to remind you guys about the show dates. There will not be a show the week of June 19th or the week of July 10th. So that's next week, no show, 2 weeks on, week off, and then we're right back at it every week again into the regular season. So just stick with us as we get through the summer. Summer of move, that's what it is for me. Make sure to check us out on Help Us Out on Patreon. Special thanks to Dylan from
Guam.
That's right. Michael, Matthew, Eric, Lucas, Joel, Bert, Nick, Noodle, Jeffrey, Brendan, Justin, John, Rand, Ross, Matt, Morgan, Randy, Peter, Matt G, Kalen, Scott, Joel, Greg, and of course our first donor, Mathis. Also want to call out our newest patrons, Marcus, Bryce, Lucas, Danny, Alex, Flounder, Richis, David, and Richard. Wow, that's a huge list. Thank you everybody for joining the crew and helping us out. Has made all of this so great and so much easier and kept all the financial analysts of the family off of our back. If you want to help join, check us out on Patreon again and patreon.com/Detroit Lions Podcast or head to DetroitLionsPodcast.com and click on the Patreon link. As soon as the move is over and I'm into the new place with the new studio, we are going to set up cameras and every Riz segment, Patreon donors are going to get a link via the YouTube and to be able to see us do it live. You missed it this week. Riz was laying on his back holding the microphone. What you thinking? And all that. So a lot of fun behind the scenes and comes off much more professional than it ever will be. Make sure to give us a like on Facebook, facebook.com/TheDetroitLionsPodcast. That's facebook.com/TheDetroitLionsPodcast. Or check us out on Twitter at DETLionsPodcast. We're almost to 1,000 followers. It's the best place to see Case
naked and covered in talcum powder.
Rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever you find us. Make sure you give us a review and help us out. Give us that 5-star rating and let people know what to think about the show. Also, you can leave us a voice message via Skype at Detroit Lions Podcast. It's all one word, Detroit Lions Podcast, or give us a call on the Lions line. That's 929-33-LIONS, 929-335-4667. Give us a message and get a chance to hear yourself on the show.
Tighten your chin straps, kids. It's time to review This Week in Reddit.
All right, it's time to talk about all the fun and exciting things going down this week in Reddit. And first off, we want to talk about Taylor Decker. We got more information, and it's not very good news, is it, Riz?
No, it is not. He, we didn't know what was going to go on with him last week. We were sort of speculating on it. Now we know he has a torn labrum, had surgery for it, and is out 4 to 6 months. I think when we were talking last week, we were expecting that was sort of like the worst case scenario, and hot dog, there it is.
I also think it was the most like predicted scenario. So, and like yes. I cautioned people about jumping to conclusions and in this instance, it probably was safe to jump to conclusions, but I just don't like it. Like, because it could have been a bunch of other things too. So, I mean, that, whatever. But
yeah. Well, 4 to 6 months is like the beginning of the season or the end of the season, right? It's right. Kind of a pretty big
October,
window.
It could be December.
Yeah, it's. Yeah, he did it the first week of June, so 4 months is the first week of October. That's week 4 of the NFL season. So you're looking at him being either on PUP, which means he's out until after the bye, because there's 8 games, then the Lions have their bye, and then they're back at it. So he's out till basically almost Thanksgiving, or he will miss the entire season. And from what I gather, they will not rush him back, and that's probably the safest course to go, because you do risk re-aggravating this injury. It is something where he will have to build strength back up before he's ready to face in the NFL. When you have shoulder surgery, you can't lift weights, and that's for a guy like Decker, that's a devastating blow. I can get by with that. I'm cool with not lifting, but for NFL players, I think that's probably a pretty big deal.
A serious issue. Yeah.
Also, one other thing that we don't know about this, I don't think, and maybe somebody out there does know, in which case, please let us know. Please let me know. We don't have any idea if it's his right or left shoulder yet, do we? Because it does make an impact for, a left tackle. You'd much rather it didn't happen at all, but it would be much worse if it was his outside shoulder that
yes.
There's, a significantly larger brunt of attacks on a regular basis. So, that to me may have some impact on whether or not he plays this season or not. And maybe I'm stepping out on a limb here regardless, but, I hope that we do find out one way or the other, which shoulder it is, just because I think that might illuminate a little bit more of what to expect.
And this is done. This feels pretty serious to have this done without pads in OTAs. I'm just, how it's basically non-contact.
How did Teddy Bridgewater absolutely shred his knee last year on non-contact? Just crazy things happen.
Yeah, it happened. It happened to the Jaguars first round pick. Dante Fowler did the same thing. Non-contact injuries, they do happen. It's weird, but maybe he like overextended reaching for something. It's not like they're not touching other things. That they do like pad drills where they have to attack the pad. We will probably never find out unless Decker lets it slip exactly what happened when it happened, but. Yeah, this is the time of one of the things that, okay, everybody had to write the 5 things that you're going to watch for in OTAs, and everybody's like number 3 or number 4 thing was injuries. And nobody wants the injuries in the mandatory minicamp that's going on this week or the OTAs. And the Lions got hit, and it's Decker. I got into a debate about this at what number of dispensable Lions is he? Like, Stafford's obviously the most indispensable. You cannot win without Matthew Stafford. And, yep. And just based on the way the depth chart is, I mean, Decker's top 5 easily.
He might be number 2. Shit.
Yeah. I wouldn't argue if you were, adamant about him being number 2.
I mean, you've got Slay in there. Yeah. You've got Quinn in there, maybe. And Tate?
Maybe, yeah. Just because all those other positions.
Theoretically, except for the fact that they're used to dealing with not having him. But,
just because of the way that the depth chart is, I mean, at the other positions, you have guys that at least have played some and shown a little bit of NFL ability. Obviously they're not going to replace their respective guy ahead of them. But, I mean, at left tackle, when you're talking about Cornelius Lucas, he can't play. Corey Robinson, yep. We're pretty darn sure he can't play.
And Joe Dahl has been the other one getting reps in the minicamp. So
pray for Joe Dahl, man, because he did play it in college in a very different scheme. And then that's, he has to unlearn his footwork from Washington State, where in his pass set, his first step every single time was to drop straight back.
Yeah.
And that's just not what they do in the NFL.
Right. Yeah. Suicide. So the one thing though, that does provide hope, and hopefully it's not false hope, but we did some work at tight end. There's no way we would have been able to get away with this last year. It would have been just wrap it up, call it a season, and be done, right? We've got some guys that can help block. You can kind of squeeze in around them a little bit and maybe lend some help over there for whoever's going to stand in where Decker isn't. But obviously, not at all an ideal loss, and it's gonna be felt. So we'll see. We'll see if that tight end help means enough to kind of alleviate some of the concern. But a lot to be written about that still. Moving on, next topic. This is one that I really like, and I think we could have some good conversation about. Gabe at House 69, he posted that. Lucas Walker, one of the writers over at DetroitLionsPodcast.com, great place to check out articles. This is from the What Detroit Lions Fans Can Expect series, and it's from Golden Tate in 2017 this year. And it's pretty good written, pretty well written. He does a good job of going through the good, the bad, the ugly, the things he can do. Where are you at on this case? What are your feelings on Mr. Tate?
I've repeatedly, over the course of this podcast, talked about how I think Tate is one of the most underrated receivers in the league. Once we get through talking about, you know, just Tate in general, we can get into, you know, his recent remarks about his contract and get into a little bit of a different discussion. But I truly believe that if he was forced into a situation where he had to be the focal point of the offense, like the only focal point of the offense, he would still thrive, and people would look at him much different. They would look at him the way they do look at other guys who have been in that position. Maybe not call him, you know, a top three receiver or anything like that. But look at him in a different light than they do right now, because of the things that he does incredibly well, and that is almost everything. I mean, despite his height. Despite his height, he's an amazing jump ball artist. He's great at contested catches because he has such great hands. He's not the fastest guy on the field, but he's excellent at route running and makes up for it that way a lot of the time. I don't know that he has one like major glaring weakness, and I don't know that there are many wide receivers out there who can be used in so many different ways as he can.
That's where I really like what he does. You can line him up at any, the X, the Y, or the Z. And even though he doesn't have the size for the X or the Z, you know, he's so good at, like you said, his body control is amazing. His strength in his upper body and his hands, just phenomenal. His ability to run routes from any, you know, at any depth of route that you ask him to. He can run the 5 yard out perfectly. He can run a cross. He can run the post. He can run a corner. He can fly down the field. He's so good at setting moves up with his head and his hips. He's so underrated. This is a guy, if he played for the Cowboys or the Steelers, you know,
if he played Julian Edelman's role in New England.
Oh man. And he could do that. He absolutely could do
better
that.
Better than Julian Edelman, and I would fight anybody who says otherwise.
Yes, and Julian Edelman's a good player.
Yeah, and totally.
Julian Edelman getting paid is the genesis for why Golden Tate is now looking to get more money, and I don't blame him for that.
I'd love if they gave him the deal that the Patriots gave Julian Edelman, but I think he'll end up getting more than what they, right?
Yeah, exactly. In the end. But he's been so prolific, though. I don't remember the exact number, but I saw a stat the other day where he's one of only four receivers that has, I think it's 90 catches each of the last 3 years. It might be 80, but that's remarkable consistency. He's done it with and without Calvin Johnson. He's done it as the number one receiver. He's done it as the number two receiver. He's just so darn good at what he does. And I think he's so underappreciated, even by Lions fans. I don't think we feel or we realize exactly how good he is. I mean, and we should, because we were – I mean, Chris Humphreys was our number two receiver at one point. I mean, or not Chris Humphreys, Chris Durham. Chris Humphreys, I'm thinking of a Kardashian. I don't know why.
Too much That's his next role. That's his next role. You know, the thing about Tate that stands out at me is his ability to not get hit. He rolls off of every tackle. He rarely takes that brutal punishing hit that you see so many guys take. It's an awareness that he has. It's his ability to move. And that is just going to help his longevity. And I think it's almost you if you're a littler guy like he is, you have to have that kind of ability to avoid those hits from those big guys out there that are just trying to take your head off. And he continues to be able to do that. And that helps him certainly in getting all that yak that he's been able to rack up.
Now, okay, so we've brought up the contract thing, and here's where things get contentious, because some of the things he said, and while I actually take most of it is somewhat tongue-in-cheek, like he wasn't being as big a dick, I think, as some people, you know, perceived it, because some people just assumed that he was being a dick and didn't necessarily realize that a lot of it was not entirely serious, or at least only half serious. He posted a check for $0 in his name, you know, things like that. And just some people saw it as whining and complaining that he's not getting paid enough. I wouldn't say that's entirely untrue either, but here's some context that I want to put Golden Tate in, and why he may feel that he's not being paid enough. And generally speaking, before I get into that, I'm pro player in general, I think that the players get screwed over by the league and their owners, you know, more often than not when it comes down to it. I also, you know, believe in contracts. So, I mean, I don't think the Lions did him dirty or are doing him dirty. So I don't want anybody to think that.
There's something to be said when you sign a contract. I hear this a lot, and I've seen it a lot lately, because you love the players. You love some players and others you don't, right? And that tends to be where people fall on when they come back asking for money or whatever. But there's two sides to it, and it's just like any negotiation. Once that contract is signed, both teams agreed to it, and there's risks associated with agreeing to that. And it just is. It's just a thing that everyone thought was fine back when they signed it. Sometimes the team gets hurt. Sometimes the player could have gotten a better deal. But that's the best looking deal that they saw at the time, and they agreed to it. I think it's just part of the business, and you really have to take that emotion out of it. You know, people say owners are trying to screw the players. The players are trying to screw the owners just as much, right? I mean, everyone's trying to get the best deal for themselves, and that's an unemotional kind of look at it. And I think, you know, in many cases, like a player like Matthew Stafford, he really has the power in that relationship. A guy like Chris Durham, he doesn't. And they're in those positions because of what they bring to the table for the negotiation.
Right. Yeah. And for the most part, I agree with that. Sometimes I think the owners wield too much power. But that's just my like worldview on things too. So we don't need to get into that. But specifically in regards to Golden Tate and why he may feel that he's been underpaid, he's kind of, if you look at the specifics of his situation, his last couple of years in Seattle, he was the de facto number one there. And people point at that and say, well, okay, he was the de facto number one, but he wasn't exactly elite production. They were also the lowest passing team in the league, and I think it, if I recall correctly, I don't remember the numbers, I had looked it up at one point, by a wide margin. If they'd been even average in the league,
they ran the ball more than they threw it.
right, and they were protecting Russell Wilson as a rookie and sophomore, you know, and I get that, but that wasn't Golden Tate's fault. He was ready to make big plays, and he was making big plays when they threw him the ball. And there was a reason, you know, that the Lions went after him. The Seahawks laughably screwed up that, you know, situation by sending money at Percy Harvin and not at Golden Tate. And Seahawks fans are still, you know, like, oh, God, I can't believe they did that.
And survived. That's the part that bothers me is they made a huge mistake like that. Exactly. They survived.
I mean, because they got Tyler Lockett, and he's awesome.
Right.
The guy that I wanted the Lions to draft very badly, and he's doing great in Seattle. Go figure.
If they could have, I mean, but if they'd hung on to Tate, who knows, you know, if they might have gone, I mean, that could have been a pretty big bump for them if they'd hung on to Tate and not spent the money on Percy Harvin. It could have been a pretty significant bump for their offense, and it could have been, you know, a pretty significant bump for Russell Wilson's development even. So who knows where they might have been, you know, in terms of they were a freight train, and losing Tate was like, you know, slowing them down a mile an hour or something like that. But, you know, if they'd been going that extra mile an hour, they might have been able to plow through a couple more Super Bowls or something. And I'm not necessarily saying that Tate would have, you know, won them Super Bowls or anything like that. But
that's what I hear you saying, Case.
He's better than anything that they've got.
Right.
I think that's inarguable.
Right.
And he would certainly make them better, even though they do have a talented team now. I mean, Doug Baldwin has shown up pretty well. You know, they're getting something out of Jimmy Graham. Given their offensive line, they don't have one offensive lineman. Well, maybe their center starts in Detroit. None of their other linemen are even backups in Detroit. Their left tackle, George Fant, he wouldn't be Cornelius Lucas's backup. He's that bad. So, I mean, the fact that they're doing what they're doing with that offensive line,
right?
That should actually give Lions fans some hope.
So the point being, that's the place where Golden Tate entered the market is through that situation, coming out of the, you know, the least prolific passing team in the league, where he was the de facto number one. And so he's at a disadvantage in terms of what kind of production potential he even had in Seattle, and immediately comes to a team with Calvin Johnson. Where there's no chance that he's going to be the number one receiver. Like he never, I don't know, you know, that was, you know, partly his decision. There were probably a suitor or two out there that he could have gone to where he would have had a more legit shot at immediately being, you know, the number one. But his first 2 years in Detroit, I mean, aside from a few games when Calvin was hurt and or, you know, out and or playing decoy, in which I might add he was absolutely prolific, he was constantly, you know, number two. And so he, again, once again, not getting the opportunity to really show his upper end production potential. And now, this last year, he's the number one, but once again, it's a situation where all of a sudden the Lions have a very deep receiving core, like one of the deepest receiving cores, not necessarily the best, just very deep. So I mean, he's going to have to share.
We can argue about that a little bit.
Well,
Bring it.
Which part are you arguing?
the depth. I'm not a fan of the wide receiver depth at all, really. I know that puts me at odds with a lot of Lions people. I don't think they're that good, and I don't think they're that deep.
I don't mean going forward here. I mean this last year. I mean with Marvin Jones and Anquan Boldin and Eric Ebron. I mean they weren't the best by any means, but they had four, if you include Theo Riddick. I mean they had five decent options to pass the ball to. So once again, it wasn't like Tate had to step into a, like, I am the only guy that you can pass the ball to on this team situation.
Oh yeah, you're right, totally right on with that. Yeah, I'm talking about the wide receivers in general.
And if he was
and going forward,
right? If he ever was in that situation, like he was briefly when Calvin was hurt, I think, you know, I think he would have a much different reputation throughout the league. And obviously, back years ago, I extrapolated out his stats from those games when Calvin was out or playing decoy. And if he'd put up the production he put in those games throughout that whole season, only Antonio Brown would have been ahead of him in yards. And I think he would have been ahead of Antonio Brown in receptions, and he'd been right there with him in touchdowns too. And obviously you can't extrapolate that out and expect that to be realistic in terms of what would have happened, but you can't 100% say that's not what would have happened either. So
I think he certainly has the talent to pull that off.
Right.
I'm not saying he's Antonio Brown, but I'm saying he could, as you put it, in that context, yes, he can put up those numbers. And I think if he were in Pittsburgh, and use the way that the Steelers use Antonio Brown with the supporting cast he has. I think I don't think he's as fast as Antonio Brown. I don't think he's quite as quick off the line. But other than that, they're not dissimilar receivers.
Mm-hmm. You know, I get alternately accused of being a, you know, homer and a hater, you know, depending on what player I'm talking about. So sometimes, you
that's
know,
how I you know you're doing it right.
Right, exactly. when it comes to Tate, maybe I'm a homer, maybe I'm biased, I don't know. Like, I feel like I'm just absorbing what I've absorbed and spitting it out, but who knows, you know, what filters that's going through in my brain to get there. So, speaking of Tate, though, we're talking about the wide receivers, and you brought up a contention about the, you know, strength of the depth of the receiving core. Well, that's been, you know, a hot topic in the OTAs and minicamp. The situation we've got, you know, we're looking at probably two new wide receivers, at least possibly three, if TJ Jones doesn't, you know, successfully defend himself, wide receivers making the team this year.
So yeah, we've got Golden Tate and Marvin Jones as your top duo, and they're fine. I think we just covered Tate fine. Marvin Jones, if he could get open a little bit better, it would be great. If he would hold on to the ball a little bit better, that would be great. He's fine, though. You can do a lot worse. The Lions have done a lot worse and have done well with a lot worse.
He's a high-end, you know, second option guy.
And he's played the 1A role. He did it in Cincinnati and did it pretty well. Yep. So I don't have a problem with those two. It's the rest of the receiving, the guys that were in the 80s on their jerseys. And I'm not counting Ebron in this, although I probably should, because I think he's going to wind up playing that sort of Bolden role. But the other wide receivers on this roster, it's not good, folks. I mean, yes, we can get excited about Kenny Golladay, and he's apparently looking very good in OTAs. I haven't been there yet. I haven't seen him. I'm looking forward to seeing him in training camp. I have seen him play in person. I saw him in two separate years at Northern Illinois, and he is talented, but he is limited. And I want to pump the brakes a little bit on people going crazy thinking he's going to step right in and be, you know, he can start at the outside wide receiver and move Tate into the slot and everything's going to be hunky dory. He's not that.
Talk about what you mean by limited, because I think that's going to help people get a better grip on what they should look for to help temper their enthusiasm.
Yeah. One of the things he played in the MAC, and you guys know I'm a huge MAC apologist. I'm an Ohio University grad. I'm wearing Ohio University gear right now. I live right by Western Michigan University. I go to as many MAC games as I can. The MAC cornerbacks and pass defense in general is terrible. Name a MAC corner in the NFL right now. I dare you. There's not many. Golladay, he at his size, he dominated people. I mean, I'll go to my Ohio Bobcats, who are the number one pass defense in the MAC last year, and one of the better pass defenses in the country. Our starting corners last year were 5'10", 180 pounds, and 5'11", 175 pounds. He's got so much size on these guys, and the way that Northern Illinois used him, he didn't necessarily run a whole lot of intricate routes. He ran to get open, and they threw the ball near him, and he was just bigger and more physical than those guys. That doesn't happen easily in the NFL. Now, it can still happen okay in OTAs, because a lot of times he's going against second and third team guys who are in that, you know, in that part of the reps chart for a reason. The Lions don't have a depth chart. They have a rep chart in OTAs and training camp. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jim Caldwell, for the wonderful, you know,
semantic lesson. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Depth, reps, whatever. Okay. Whatever floats your boat, Jim. But okay. So the biggest thing,
but isn't if that, it sounds like Northern Illinois strategy was the same strategy that the Lions used for many years with Calvin Johnson.
It is, but at the same time, one of the things that, like, Calvin could get open, he could, you know, he had speed, he could shake people off, he had footwork. One of the things that you notice about Golladay right away is he takes a long stride right off the snap, and physical corners, T's Tabor is a good example. Tease Tabor loves going against guys like this because they can't run past him. If they try to go through him, he can hold him up. He's very good at that. That plays to his strength. This is a guy, he's just not. I mean, if we complained last year about Marvin Jones not getting open on the outside and down the field, Galladay's going to have the same problem. Now, he's a bigger and more physical target, and I think he'll do okay in that. But this guy in a proper NFL depth chart offense, he's your number five receiver as a rookie. And mm-hmm. he's going to be, for all intents and purposes, the number three receiver on this team. And that's asking a whole lot of him. And part of the problem is, okay, who do you want to replace him? Is Jared Aberderis that? Hell no.
And he's been getting, I mean, to speak on that just for a sec, he's a perfect example of a guy who's getting a lot of hype in training camps, mini camps and whatnot that don't just buy in because...
Yeah, he got that in Green Bay too, and look where.
Well, he definitely did. I remember hearing his hype from Green Bay, you know, and I don't hear most of their hype for you know non-rosterable players. So he definitely got hype and then didn't live up. So
is that why around the division's been so bad lately, Case? Because you're not doing your research?
No, I'm doing research. Very little interesting happening.
I've been picking on Case far too much lately. I apologize, okay. Case.
So then we look, okay, your slot receiver is TJ Jones or Jace Billingsley. I know everybody who's been to Allen Park to watch training camp loves Jace Billingsley. I'm guilty of that too. He looks really good when he's running routes against air, but man, when the defense is actually hitting people, there's a reason why he hasn't made this team 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
or it didn't make it last year. You know,
are you giving a premonition here? Are you looking forward
with your 2 years in a row? Could be, yeah. But he's Andrew Peacock. He's just wearing a different jersey and different name and slightly different skin tone. And that's where we're at with Jace Billingsley. Guys like that, guys who play that style, that quicker than fast slot people, they always, always look good in camp. And they probably look pretty good in the preseason too. And then when the field shrinks and the real defense is out there and it's faster and the pass rush is a little bit more intense and you've got to block more when things actually matter, those guys, they wither, man. That's why he didn't make the team last year. You know, I think he will probably make the team because I do think he's better than TJ Jones, although Jones did show up once.
A couple
once.
Times on some.
I mean, yeah, he's the
no,
big
but
thing
I,
with him
I'm
is
not,
he's,
I'm not
he,
gonna argue
he's so though. Yeah, he's so small framed. So so yeah. you're then your depth chart. I mean, you're there looking at Keyshawn Martin. I mean, what a miserable flop he was in Houston. They couldn't wait to get rid of him. Ryan Spadola, Dantes Ford, Michael Rector. I mean, these are the okay. Rector, I'm looking at the
hell, damn near killed her. Sorry,
I'm looking at the bottom of it. Noel Thomas. I don't know who Noel Thomas is, and I cover the NFL draft for a living. I have no clue who he is. I don't know where he went to school. I only know Robert Toynan because he was a great story down in Indianapolis, and I actually kind of like him. But he's sort of a tight end playing wide receiver. He's actually kind of like an Ebron. A poor man's Ebron,
which is I heard his name talked about. Like if Ebron were to knock on wood, get injured in preseason or something like that, that might open the door for him to roster.
But again, this is a guy that's coming from an NAIA school. This isn't even a Division III player. He played at a lower school than that. So I mean, that's asking a whole lot. He's got practice squad written all over him. That's your wide receiving core. That's after your first two and maybe Galladay is okay as a rookie. And I do like his long-term prognosis. I really do, even though I just ripped on him. if Tate or Jones gets hurt, this team is in a world of hurt at wide receiver. I mean, this is why I have been advocating that they go out and get Eric Decker. Because there's a guy, he's 30 years old, he's reasonably healthy, he's one of the five best red zone threats in the league over the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
That he knows
and
how to get open.
You convinced me when we talked last week, you absolutely convinced me that it was a good idea. And I hope that, and then we haven't heard anything connecting the Lions to him yet, but...
We have not. He was just released this morning. It's Tuesday. Yep. We're recording this. So, yeah, I don't think there will be a lot of interest from Detroit, quite honestly. I think this is one of those deals where I think they want to see what they have, and they'll ride in the camp with it, and maybe through the first couple of preseason games. And if somebody gets cut from another team, I think that's where they're looking. Or if, you know, if Bolden is still out there and not getting offers, and I think that's very realistic.
Yeah.
You know, he can come back and be comfortable.
What time did we sign him last year? It wasn't until July.
Exactly. Yeah, I think it was the day before training camp started.
Yeah.
And that could very well be the case again. So, it's not set in stone where they're at, but right now, this wide receiving core, after the first two, it's bottom five in the NFL after the top two. I have no problem saying that. And it hurts me to say it, but it's absolutely true. And that's, maybe Galladay improves that to where they're bottom 10, maybe. And if Billingsley and or Jones shows up, or, abracadabra, I want to reach out and grab you, Darius, finally lives up to what the people at Wisconsin, lapped him up to be. He's no Jeff Janis.
No, he's not. So, hey, really quick, you guys, as we go through these guys, maybe you want to get yourself an abracadabra jersey. Maybe he's your guy. Don't forget, head on over to DetroitLionsPodcast.com. Click on that shop link in the main menu, and it'll take you over to Fanatics. You can get anything for any team. It's the official gear. I saw a lot of talk about some of the Chinese dupes, and that's okay. That's the way you want to go. But if you want the official real deal stuff, head on over to DetroitLionsPodcast.com and click on that link. Same thing if you're going to do any shopping at Amazon, or if you want any tickets, you got SeatGeek up there. All three of those help us out by you guys doing and buying something you were going to buy anyway. No extra cost to you, but they give us a little kickback as long as you come from DetroitLionsPodcast.com. All right, so got that in there. Let's slide over to an extension. This is a big discussion. I think this is an important discussion. And I feel like, Riz, we've talked about this before, and you said that we're getting close in time to when we should start sniffing around and hearing about that extension. Matthew Stafford and his contract extension. What do you think's going on?
I think they're probably talking behind closed doors and we won't know it. And it's going to be one of those deals where they announce it on a day where, like all the beat writers are like off on like covering a golf outing or something. that's exactly what they're going to do. Now, the interesting thing is Derek Carr also needs an extension. And I think both of them and their agents at representation realize that the guy who signed second is going to get a bigger deal. So it's sort of a little bit of a game of chicken too. And they're both going to get $25 million a year. I don't think there's any question about that. It's just a matter of, who gets the $25 million, who gets the extra million guaranteed and gets the extra, $500,000 appearance bonus, because that's going to be the only difference between the two contracts. It's insane to think that the Lions would not sign Matthew Stafford. I cannot fathom a world where they would not sign him. But, again, there are some, the car thing is an issue. I think they still have to see, do we have to go out and sign somebody to replace Taylor Decker? I don't think they're at that point. Do they want to
have many options to do it either? So
no, I mean, one of the top options retired, was King Dunlap.
So. Yeah.
There's really not much out there. So, where else would they spend that money? And I think that they were preparing for this. That's one of it's not one of the reasons why that they got money back from Calvin, but it doesn't hurt. They set themselves up nicely to absorb a major contract hit and can structure it with some flexibility now in how they structure a. He's going to get, my God, $60 to $65 million guaranteed. That's a huge cap hit over 3 or 4 years. But I think they're well positioned to swallow that. And I think it's going to come. I do think it's going to come this summer. I think it'll come probably before the first preseason game. But again, it's going to be one of those things we won't know it until it happens.
Yeah.
And knocking on wood, hopefully it isn't one of those deals like after Levy signed. See that horrible injury. Oh, man, we were so happy.
I don't think Matthew Stafford's going to be, standing on a biplane or, fooling with sloths in the Amazon or anything like that.
No, I hope not. That is just every time I think of a big re-signing, I think of Levy and what happened there. We were so excited that we'd gotten such a good deal, and then that got to be one of the more expensive deals we've probably signed, at least in recent history, if not in decades. All right, so Matthew Stafford's extension. Case, what do you feel like? You think we're going to see it here in the offseason, or do you think he's going to play it out a little longer? As we were talking about earlier, he's the guy with all the leverage in this relationship.
Yeah, but I also don't think he's given any indication whatsoever that he has any interest in going anywhere else. So we're not talking about a hometown discount, but we are talking about a hometown like willingness to work something out. So I
in the structure of the deal, exactly. Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think he's completely sold on this team, and he knows that he will go down as one of the top known members of the sports community in the history of the world if he brought a title to Detroit. So that would be something to see. That party is going to be awesome. A couple of huge signings. Riz, we got Ego Ferguson and Bruce Gastone signed. I mean, all our troubles are over. Count the Super Bowl rings now, right?
I'm breathing heavy here. Wow. I mean, this. If you want to talk about hurting, or I shouldn't say hurting, pillaging from your NFC North foes, they've done a pretty good job of this, because both Ego Ferguson and Bruce Gastone have both played for the Bears and the Packers within the last 18 months. I forget which team it is. Forgive my crossed wires here. One of those teams cut Ego Ferguson to sign Bruce Gaston, and now they're following each other
and
to
we
Detroit.
Them both. They win for us.
They are, and the crazy thing is that they both play the exact same position. They are lightweight attacking three techniques. I know Chicago tried to move Ferguson outside in the 3-4 and also tried to make Gaston. It is Bruce Gaston. I've met him. He played at Purdue. He wasn't half bad there. He was pretty good at the Shrine game. He actually destroyed, I forget the name of the center, but he like literally forklifted him, and it was very impressive. He's never done anything like that in the NFL, though.
and I mean, it's not a position and a role that the Lions have placed a lot of value on. I mean, obviously, you know, they were starting Nada and Robinson as their, you know, two primary starters at defensive tackle last year, and neither of them are, you know, penetrating defensive tackles. And, you know, we had high hopes for Tyron. I had high hopes for Tyron Walker, and I don't know whether or not that leg injury, the broken bone set him back permanently in that or
what. And no flag on that play. No flag on that play. I'm still bitter.
Yeah.
That guy, damn
it. I hate that. And that's one of my most angry, cringeworthy moments in NFL history. It really is. Yeah. That totally pissed me off.
Yeah.
Still does.
You could hear it across the TV. And I hate saying that across the TV, but whatever. You could hear that snap, and not to have a flag. It was right in front of the ref. I'm angry about that one. I'm absolutely angry, because that guy had a lot of potential, I thought. And that really just stopped him in his tracks. And that really sucks.
Yeah.
There she does. I guess the hope here is that one of these two becomes the defensive tackle version of what Kerry Hyder was at the beginning of last year, and gives you the unexpected, you know, nameless veteran spark who can get you, you know, three sacks and five pressures in the first six games. And Ego first, this guy, he was a fairly high draft pick. I believe he was a third round pick by the Bears.
Second.
Yeah, exactly. And wasn't, again, this was a guy who had some fairly decent production in college, but his biggest problem, he goes backwards so easily. He's a guy that you want, like he's a guy who could make Lakin Tomlinson look like a bulldozer in run blocking. Yeah. He's on skates and run defense. That's why the Bears got tired of him. That's why he lasted not even for a cup of coffee with the Packers.
To be Gaston, fair, sorry, real quick on Ego. To be fair to Ego, he was drafted by the Bears to play 4-3 defensive tackle, and then they immediately switched over to a 3-4 system. So
yes, they did.
So while he knew it was never great, like I'm not saying he ever would have been great as a 4-3 defensive tackle, he did have that added, you know, difficulty of trying to transition into a 3-4 defensive end. shortly after his career began. So
he also got suspended for PEDs along the way and has had some injury issues too. So, I mean, keep your expectations pretty low here, but,
so no Super Bowl ring as a result. Is that what you're saying? I mean, I was pretty amped here when we first started talking about these guys.
He does have a great name, and Bruce Gaston or Gaston. I mean, with Beauty and the Beast coming out on DVD, I'm sure all of our kids want that. And
if Ego
the chips make themselves.
If Ego ever were to end up being good, you know that we'd be calling him the Living Planet. So,
oh god, okay. Oh, my. All right, that one's been worn out. We'll move on. And it's actually probably a good transition. Case, I did not know that you had gotten a plane ticket to Detroit, heading down to Allen Park. The headline is from the Lionist. Disturbed fan invades the Lions minicamp practice.
I just wanted to meet Stafford. What I mean...
They said you get rid of Whitehead, you could play his position. Is that what I heard happened?
I wanted a walk-on opportunity. I tried to take it.
As funny as this is, it's also, how the heck does this happen in today's day and age? I don't know. It just shows you that you get groups of people together, anything stupid can happen. Boy.
Well,
you know, on a serious note, I cover these sporting events. I'm in the press box sometimes. There are times when I'm down on the field access. It is a little scary how unsecure things can be. And they do control access pretty well. If you've never been to Allen Park, you do have to go through a security snake line. They do pat you down before you go in. They don't let you carry in anything that's not clear. It's the same as going into a stadium. But man, it is a little scary. You need that when you go to certain venues.
Well, I mean, obviously, this is gonna provoke a shift in some, the security, protocol. Like this particular incident probably won't happen again in the near future.
Maybe, yeah. You're right. That's kind of hard because I didn't see how he got down onto the field, but it seems like to me, if you're bold enough, you could get down on the field and you see the guys streaking and the guys running away and they get away from security. It seems like at the practice facility, and again, having not been there yet, other than on the outside and seeing them when they're practicing outside. It seems like it would be relatively easy just to get down there. And I mean, once you start making a scene, once you start making that kind of noise, then it's all over. Then you've drawn attention to yourself, but it seems like you could slide down there and get some traction on those shoes before they get a hold of you. Is that how you got in, Riz?
Yes, absolutely. it is only a thin little rope that holds you back. I could hurdle it if I had to.
There you go.
Run out there and steal Sam Martin's helmet.
All right. Well, Case, I wish you the best of the luck in getting that position away from Whitehead. I think you can do it. I think you're the guy to really, really make that happen.
I need you to post my bail.
Yeah, sure thing. And you're right in saying that it won't happen again now that you've been banned from the facility. So let's go on. There's one piece that you want to talk about, Case, and I'm just going to do a real quick setup here because we haven't really gone in depth in the pre-show prep on it. But you were talking about how the NBA just wrapped up their season and that there's some parallels you could probably draw between the NBA and the NFL. So I'm going to hand you the mic here and let you go at it.
It's maybe less about parallels than it is about perpendiculars. But let's just set the stage here. Okay. And I told Riz that I'm not going to, pick on Cleveland. And I'm not. I am going to suggest that. Okay. This is a Lions podcast. So none of you really want to hear a long rant about the NBA. So I'll try to keep this as short as possible. But Kevin Durant's getting all this hate for ring chasing by joining the Golden State Warriors to, make them a super team, whatever, clearly the most talented team in the league. And that's unfair to everybody else. And
he joined a team with three Olympians on it already.
Right. Now, Is that a
actually four that, because Zaza's starting center for Argentina. They have four starting Olympians on their team.
Right. And I don't argue with the concept at all that that's unfair.
It's not good for the league.
Complaint
for the sport.
Is that who's at fault here? And is Kevin Durant the one that should be getting all the blame? When, I might add, LeBron James is not getting the same level of criticism for A, his move to Miami. That was not quite the same level, but not that far off either.
Well, when it happened, he sure got some criticism.
That. Right. And
the city was on fire.
He absolutely did. And it's like people kind of forgot about that. And then the going back to Cleveland only after they had,
built a landing spot.
Kyrie Irving and were bringing a bunch of other guys with it. So it's like he tried to do what Golden State did in Cleveland. And just didn't do as good a job at it. and I don't get... Okay, so the basic concept here is I don't understand the level of hate for Kevin Durant when it's a league issue. It's a problem with the league. Now, I will also mention that this was the most highly rated NBA season in NBA history, which is... That's on the fans. If you are really upset with... what the league NBA is allowing to have happen, what are you doing by buying in at the same time? Like you're simultaneously buying in and complaining, and that's not going to help anything.
All right, Casey, you got to tie this to football. Otherwise we're going to be accused of talking about wrestling. Like some.
Well, the tie to the NFL was, the NBA is going through a situation right now where they're peaking in popularity, but it's likely to come crashing down sharply.
It's a bubble.
If they can't fix the... Right, exactly. If they can't fix this issue. And I don't know that they can fix this issue in the short term. At least for the next few years, it's going to be the Warriors and the Cavs and maybe a couple other teams. But the NFL, as for all the complaints that I have about the systems, in place, the reason that I feel like the growth of the NFL has been so steady has been the avoidance of this kind of issue. You've got an issue with the Patriots, maybe. And part of that is actually it born out of, Tom Brady taking a team-friendly deal when nobody else in the NFL will take a team-friendly deal. I shouldn't say nobody else. I mean, it does happen, but it's structured so that the one you can't set up a team in the same way that the NBA can, and that my love for the NFL will always be greater than my love for the NBA or my interest in the NBA anyway, and that is a large part of why that is true right now. And
I think there's just so many more players on a football team, mm-hmm. and I think it's hard to let's set up the hypothetical that for some reason all kinds of star players want to go to Carolina to play with Cam Newton because they love Cam, mm-hmm. and Odell Beckham Jr. decides to leave the Giants to take less money to sign with Carolina, and mm-hmm. I don't know, Le'Veon Bell leaves Pittsburgh to go to Carolina. And a couple of defensive standouts do it.
And Darius Slay, they all take Carolina to play with Cam Newton.
There you go. Yeah, right. Darius Slay and Ziggy Ansah. They go at the same time.
Yeah,
just because that's that's kind of what has happened in the NBA. And that's what happened to Portland. It's exactly what happened to Portland actually in the NBA. They lost two guys like that. But back to football. It just doesn't happen that way because there's still so many other guys on the team who can win or lose your games for you. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's hard to like the Warriors, they can have, they actually do have some decent depth, not to go all basketball, but Livingston's a good player. I think they got some quality minutes out of some other people, but you can win with a great starting five and like one or two guys to play, X amount of minutes. The Cavs got to the finals basically playing seven guys. And for most of the playoffs, when they were good, it was the same five guys on the court. When J.R. Smith was playing well, J.R. Smith and Kyle Korver would share that other, you know, that sort of number six guy role. But you didn't need the rest of the depth on the team. You can pay those guys league minimum. You can't do that in the NFL. And I think that's why this won't necessarily happen in the NFL. At the same time, when the Cleveland Browns make the trade that they did for Brock Osweiler, where Houston gave them a draft pick to get rid of a bad contract, that scares the hell out of the NFL.
Yeah, I won't argue with that.
Yeah, and I think that's a precedent that a lot of teams in the NFL and a lot of fans in the NFL didn't want to see, because that does open things up for teams stacking like that, and it opens up the door for teams tanking. We've talked about on the NFL podcast how the Jets are hell bent on going 0-16 this year. That seems to be their overriding goal. They've cut everybody that you know,
everybody's talked about in the past about, you know, the whole suck for luck thing and how that's probably not a good strategy, even in terms of a rebuilding team, because, you totally lose the morale of all the guys who are on the team. So any talent you might have had, you know, never reaches their potential because they know that, you know, there's no, like, they don't see the point.
Okay, so the one thing that I think we'll hear about is the importance of the quarterback position and how, well, that's different. That's your one player that's going to win. I'm going to throw a couple names at you guys, all right? And you tell me what's in common with these guys. You got Brad Johnson, Doug Williams, Mark Rypien, Jeff Hostetler, and Trent Dilfer. What can you guys tell me about those gentlemen?
Super Bowl winning quarterbacks, baby.
And all mediocre.
Yeah.
None of them were great. And so as important as the quarterback position can be, you can build out a team without that superstar quarterback and win.
And Joe Flacco to that list too.
I was just going to say Joe Flacco is right here.
Yep. So again, it can be done. And as important a position as it is, and I don't think anyone's saying that it's not, you don't need that. It's not the same as bringing a LeBron into your team or somebody like that into the locker room to try to make a team win.
Yeah.
You just don't have that same effect.
Well, yeah. look at the whole suck for luck thing for a second. Andrew Luck's not any better than Matthew Stafford. How's that work for Indianapolis? They did win a couple of playoff games. And by the way, he wasn't all that good in them. He has a negative touchdown interception ratio in the playoffs. He's incredibly lucky in getting comebacks. Has that really worked for them? I mean, I guess, but they're not as good as they were.
That's what I mean by saying, you know, yeah. I mean, the whole idea of tanking for one player is it's likely to leave a lot of other long-term wounds
Totally.
I don't know that there are any exceptions to that rule. There might be. There's probably an exception out there, but I can't think of one off the top of my head.
Well, and I'll tell you, you know, they didn't have to suck to pick me up, and I'm even on touchdown interception ratio. So got that for you. All right. On that bombshell, we'll call it a day. We'll call it a show. Remember, the show needs your involvement. Use the comments in the subreddit to give us your feedback. You guys are what make us number one, and we appreciate all the feedback you bring about the show. Don't forget about us on Patreon, patreon.com/Detroit Lions Podcast, or just head over to DetroitLionsPodcast.com and click on that Patreon link. All you folks that help us out, thank you. Thank you so much. Don't forget about us on Facebook, facebook.com/TheDetroitLionsPodcast, facebook.com/TheDetroitLionsPodcast, and on Twitter, @DETLionsPodcast. That's @DETLionsPodcast. It's the best place to see Case
with no pants on.
Damn straight. All right. Leave us a voice message via Skype at Detroit Lions Podcast. It's all one word on Skype, Detroit Lions Podcast, or call the Lions line at 929-33-LIONS. That's 929-335-4667. Leave a message, get a chance to hear yourself on the show. And be sure to go to DetroitLionsPodcast.com to subscribe to the podcast. That way we can come in your little box automatically. Thank you for tuning in. And we're going to see you next time on the Detroit Lions Podcast. It's your Detroit Lions and Reddit connection.
Let's bring it in here together. Let's go. Woo! Let's go, baby. Lions on three. 1, 2, 3.
Lions!
So when an adjustment...
when an adjustment is made. When an ninja.
Woo! Okay. And actually, yeah, four. Well, yeah, no, those were three. Unless I'm, and then we also.
I'm not sure how many times it's going to take me to say this right, but I'm going to keep trying.
An adjustment, an add, and you'll be good.